Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, for many people, exercise is a positive part of daily life, boosting mood, improving health and helping manage stress. But what happens when that healthy habit starts to tip into something a little bit more extreme? I'm joined now by Luke Tabersky, keynote speaker and executive coach. Hello, Luke.
G'day. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. I suppose the best place to start is the beginning. Isn't that what they say? And you were into exercise. How did you come to find exercise as a passion for yourself?
Well, I used to play professional soccer, and that's how I got into it. And then when I retired from the game, I just always had done it. So I dove into the world of ultra endurance triathlons, so really long swimming, cycling and running. And that's how I got into what you would call a daily exercise.
You were suffering with insomnia as well, I think. Was that right? And that's what also kind of prompted the, I'm reading about late night sessions of doing marathons at 2 a.m. or whatever because you couldn't sleep.
Yeah, exactly. So when I retired from soccer, I had this loss of identity, and I fueled that with doing more and more exercise. And the highs were great because when you exercise, you get these endorphins. But because I was struggling with my mental health, with my depression, and that led into insomnia. So I'm sitting around in my bedroom, can't sleep. So I would just get up and go and run for 3 or 4 hours in the middle of the night. And that started a slippery slope.
Did people know you were doing this at this stage?
No, I hid it all. I was a good actor. And so no one really knew I was going through what I was going through from a mental health perspective. And also they could see the training I was doing and it looked really good. And I was doing these big adventures, but they didn't see the extra 5, 6, 7 hours of training I was doing a week hidden behind closed doors, late nights, or not even using my watch to record it so it wouldn't upload to some of the social sharing apps. So I wouldn't wear a watch, so I would hide the training sessions I was doing.
Were you getting praise for it? I suppose the ones that people knew about, were people very impressed with your efforts?
Yeah, so I was doing some really big challenges all around the world. That was a way of what I was making a living from, being an adventurer. So I was getting this applause. I was getting this media attention, all of this great feedback, and people would see what I was doing is inspirational. And I was kind of like living this double life where on the outside, I was projecting, wow, I'm doing all this great stuff. I'm being really healthy. I'm training really hard. My body stayed the same because when I was doing all these extra sessions, I was like binge eating on foods to make sure that my body wouldn't go up or down in weight.
Okay, so Morocco to Monaco then, would you say that was the turning point, this ultra triathlon, 2,000 kilometres? Oh my God.
It's crazy just saying it out loud, right?
Huge, like insane. But was that the point of kind of, you've obviously come back from it because you're talking to me now on the phone, but was that when it kind of crystallised for you because of what happened to your body during it?
So that was in 2015 and I knew subconsciously that something wasn't right about 18 months before that, because I was battling with insomnia, my depression was really bad, but I didn't have the strength, the personal internal strength to reach out for help, to get help. But it was only really when I completed the ultimate triathlon, my 2,000 kilometer in 12 day ultimate triathlon from Morocco to Monaco, and my body shut down for about the next 18 months. And I went from training 25 hours a week of swimming, cycling and running and gym strength training in the gym to struggling to walk a mile or a couple of kilometers. And I had to then go and see health professionals and had different tests to see what was wrong with me. And basically my body was just shutting down from extreme fatigue. And that's when I knew, hey, like there's a problem here.
Did you finish that race? Were you able to?
So it was my own creation.
Okay.
So it's not a race. I'm the only one that's done it, probably rightly so. And yeah, I got through the 2,000 kilometers in 12 days from Morocco to Monaco. There's actually an award-winning documentary made about it on Amazon as well. So if you want to see what it was like, but I paid the price for several years after.
Can you talk to me about how it felt in that moment, or I suppose, again, not potentially a moment, but that experience of your body shutting down? Like what actually was happening to your body? What were you experiencing in real time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was sleeping a lot, like 12, 13 hours a day, and just waking up and feeling exhausted and only really feeling awake, so to speak, about for 1 or 2 hours in the afternoon, and then I was just fatigued. I was tired. I had no appetite, but I needed to eat. And I was getting headaches for most of the day as well. And I just struggled to keep on weight. I know people go, oh, that'd be a great thing. But I was just losing weight and getting really skinny. And even though I was trying to eat, but without an appetite, it's really hard to do. And I just had a impaired cognitive function. So being able to think, being able to remember things, like I'd walk into the kitchen and be like, not what am I trying to get here? But I'm thinking, why am I even here? I don't even remember getting off the couch to coming into the kitchen. So I'd having all these little black spots. So from a day-to-day perspective, when it was really bad, that was about the first 6 months. And it was only till about 9-10 months after I finished the Ultimate Triathlon is when I started to feel somewhat normal for me. But that was after a lot of rest, a lot of sleep, a lot of interventions from different medical practitioners and some supplements that were created specifically for me and what my body was going through.
How did your inner circle react, I suppose, upon this happening to you? And I suppose you eventually coming out and saying, this is what I've been doing and this is what I've been dealing with. And this is as a result of that.
Yeah, I felt shame. Because I was this adventurer who doing these big challenges. I come from a professional sporting background. I have an exercise science degree. So on paper, I know better. So I felt a lot of shame when I did reach out to people, when I did share with my inner circle. But it was received with so much love, with so much support, with so much understanding. And it was a really significant shift for me because I realized, hey, this thing that I've hid for several years, this thing that I feel shame on, the people that really care for me and love me, they understood and they rallied around me to support and to get the help that I needed. So it was a really significant shift for me.
How do you think people can spot the signs of exercise addiction? Because you're talking out there about how you would have gone to great lengths, you know, doing the challenges at night, not sharing stuff on social media. Is there anything else that people should be aware of if maybe there's someone in their life now and they think maybe their approach to exercise is not the healthiest?
That's a very, very tricky question, which you could appreciate. But I think one thing that I've seen over the years is people who think they need to exercise every day to be healthy. Now, let's exclude the professional athletes, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's just use the everyday person who's just trying to get fit and healthy. Maybe they are training for a goal. They're training for a marathon. They're training for a fitness competition. They're training to try and be a better teammate on a team that they're playing with on the weekends for whatever sport. But it's when people start to think, I need to do this every single day. And if I don't, and people get anxious, if people get a little bit upset, if people get angry because they can't train and it starts to dictate their daily life, that is one of the many, many signs that I've seen that exercise is starting to turn unhealthy than actually being healthy.
What was recovery like for you? You talk about having to sleep and kind of, you know, having to push past this, these cognitive issues in the brain fog. What was recovery like? And I suppose, how long did that take? Because when we're talking about the 2,000 kilometers and these challenges and stuff like that, obviously there's an accumulative effect there. I can imagine recovery was the same in the sense that it wasn't going to be an overnight fix for you.
Yeah, so physically, like muscles and things, they recover within a couple of weeks when you do these big challenges. But what I really struggled with was my endocrine system, so my hormonal system. And after I finished the 2,000 kilometer ultimate triathlon, I knew I was in a bad state. So I went to see some specialists in endocrine system and some wellness GPs who sort of look at traditional medicine and it's like East and West, so to speak. So I had some supplements that were made specifically for me because my DHEA, which is like your human growth hormone, which is a precursor for testosterone. So very important for men. And it was almost zero. So I had to have these little lozenges made specifically for me to try and get my body to secrete this DHEA hormone that I was struggling to secrete. So I had all these different supplements and potions and concoctions that were given to me. And it was really trying to listen to my body. Now, it was difficult because I still had to work, right? Like we've all got to work. So I would have to be really strategic with how I spent my time when I was delivering talks, when I was working one-to-one with clients, that it was like I had to minimize my structure. So then I had to take a hit to my income to just try and help me get through this. So over the course of the first 6 months after I did that, it was really doing minimal work just to get by and pay the bills, which was a choice in itself. But I had all these different supplements I needed to take. I also used, it's starting to come out more and more, hyperbaric chamber therapy. So it's, you're basically in this big chamber that pumps out a higher level of oxygen to help rejuvenate your cells and to help your body recover from a whole load of different ailments. And I started using that. I bought, I think, about 20 or 30 sessions over the course of several months to try and help my body speed up its recovery, and then just rest and sleep and try and eat a lot of good food, and also therapy. Therapy really helped me physically because it was helping me to wrap my head around what I was going through, what I had been through, to help me make better choices to move forwards. And all in all, I would say before I felt myself again, it took me about 18 months to recover from all of that.
What's your relationship like with exercise now?
Great. Really, really great. So that, I did the Ultimate Triathlon 10 years ago, and probably 2 or 3 years after that, it took a while to have that relationship with exercise, that it wasn't a coping mechanism, because I dealt with the fact that I wasn't a professional soccer player anymore. I let go of my identity of this professional athlete that I'd had my whole life. And I just realized I'm Luke. It's not who I am, is not what I do. So it was more of about understanding the letting go of that identity and know that I love exercise. I love moving the body. It makes me feel good, but I don't need to do it for 25 hours a week to make me feel good. I can just go out for a half an hour run or a 20 minute bike ride or a little swim or go to the gym. And it just makes me smile to know that the journey I've been on and how far I've come. So whenever I have opportunities to share my story, if I can help anyone, I always do.
Where do you think the first port of call should be for someone who might be looking to rebuild a healthier and a more balanced relationship with exercise?
I think creating a network of support around you is really, really important. So you can then have someone to support you. But I think the main thing, and probably the most difficult thing, is being able to look in the mirror and honestly say to yourself, am I being detrimental in how I approach life to exercise? And because, you know, the old saying of, you know, you can only help someone if they want help. It's really being honest with yourself and then reaching out and saying, look, I do need help. I think that is the best port of call. And then after that, there are so many different professionals that you can seek help with. But I think getting a support network around you is the first best place to start.
Luke, I'm so glad you're here and that you were able to speak to me today. I really appreciate it. Luke Tiberski, keynote speaker and executive coach on exercise addiction.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.